And when everyone's super, no one will be.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
And as promised, at the end of last week's show, we're going to talk about the UEFA Europa Conference League. Yes, half an hour of chat on UEFA's new third tier... I'm just getting some late news coming in. Europe's major clubs announced to sign up for Super League. Ooh, that sounds serious. I'll put that to talk about maybe for the last 10 minutes. There's more breaking news coming in. Jose Mourinho is fired as Tottenham manager. Says it's all down to the Super League. Well, this is sounding even more serious. Maybe the second half can be all about that. Not more breaking news. More breaking news. What's this coming on now? Ian Holloway says that the European Super League disrespects the memory of Prince Philip. Well, that's it then, isn't it? I'm sorry, listeners. We're going to have to put the discussion about the UEFA Conference League on hold. I can't see anything for it, lads. We've got to talk about the European Super League. But hey.
You know, in a strong field, that is the best intro you've ever done.
This time it's real, though, isn't it, Terry? It's not like before.
This time I know it's for real.
Yeah, it really is. It's actually happening, probably. Only total incompetence and complete mismanagement can stop it now.
Oh, well, yeah. And that never happens in football, does it?
Certainly not.
This is Monday evening. The Leeds Merseyside Reds game hasn't kicked off yet. So we're going to try and get this done before that starts, because there's probably going to be some hijinks at the start of that, I'm sure. This story is evolving and unfolding, and things are changing all the time. So, of course, we can only go on what we know at the moment. And let's face it, it's all fragmented and a lot of guesswork and a lot of fun to read all the stuff there is on Twitter and wherever you get your online news from. Was this really a bolt out of the blue? After the initial surprise, did you think, well, yeah, this was just a matter of when it was going to happen rather than if?
I was shocked by the announcement, yes, and by how advanced the plans are. But in terms of the overall project, the idea that a Super League would come about, I mean, I've said for a long time that I thought it was inevitable. It's funny, actually, last week I was talking about this with my son, and I said to him, I used one of those in our lifetime, son, type thing. Like, it's something that will happen in the next 10 to 15 years. That was the time frame I put on it. And then that weekend, it actually did happen, which again just reinforces to my son what an utter loser, an idiot his father really is. Not that he needed much reminding of that, to be fair. But yeah, it certainly broke the headlines, hasn't it? Everywhere you look, it's happening. It's very, very big news, and it is quite shocking, as I said, how far that they've gone with it. I don't think this is some kind of power play. I think they mean it this time.
Terry, is it for real this time? Is it actually going to happen?
It's certainly there for real. I think it's sincere. I don't think that it's a power play. Whether it happens or not, of course, is another matter entirely, because there's an awful lot that needs to happen between now and then for it to actually happen. But I think the idea that this is somehow a kind of tactic to gain more control or concessions out of UEFA for the Champions League, I think is completely false, because they've announced it. If you're going for power play, you're commissioning and then leaking consultation documents. You're shooting your mouth off at Financial Times conferences. You're just generally talking about it. But now what they've done is that they have acted in open defiance by announcing this, in open defiance of their national federations and of UEFA, and have opened themselves out for official sanctions. There's no way that this is a power play and that they're looking for some kind of compromise. They intend to do this, and I guess they intend to bring UEFA and their respective federations to heel in the process as well.
The timing of it's quite interesting as well, isn't it? The day before UEFA were to announce a restructure of the Champions League. I think that is really telling. So they've done that deliberately on the eve of that announcement to really say to the world, we ain't taking part in this. This is our show from now on. And we're going to sink that ship, effectively.
Yeah, the plans from UEFA for a restructure of the Champions League are a sort of halfway house. They're a compromise because of the posturing that Terry's just described. The overtures that these clubs have been making over the last decade or so. So it's worthwhile perhaps for us to explore the motivations behind it, because yes, of course, money, but then again, the motivations of all football owners and clubs is money. So I think it's worthwhile that we have a look at that and also look at the potential impacts of it as well. I know if you do listen to a lot of football podcasts this week, this is all everyone's going to be talking about. And of course, everyone will have their own take on it, but we'll try to limit the amount of time that we just sit around shaking our heads going, oh no, this is bad. Because yeah, okay, it's a given. It is bad. It's a terrible idea. But let's also now have a look and see what the future holds for football and for fans of these clubs and for fans of other clubs as well. So what have we got? We've got 12 teams, half of which are from England and the rest come from Italy and Spain. Setting up in a new league that they want to have 15 teams in, plus 5 invited teams that get to come in, have a little play, and then piss off again before they take too much money. Now, virtually every league of every sport in the world was formed as a breakaway. Everyone. If you look at the Football League, it was set up as a collection of clubs that was a closed shop for them to play each other, earn lots of money by playing each other. And then if anyone was wanted to come into it, it would be because the rest of them got together and voted them in. They did that with enough clubs to get to 2 divisions. When it got to the 3rd division, that was created from teams that were breaking away from the Southern League. They didn't get promoted, they broke away from it. And the same thing happened with the Northern League as well. So throughout history, and you go through lots of different sports, virtually every competition you see is created by teams that had decided they were bigger than everyone else and they ring-fenced the money that they were going to make for themselves. Now, there is an importance attached to the word league. There are 2 vague bodies that you get in sports. You get associations and you get leagues. The words have meaning. If you're an associate with someone, it's a loose body. There is no structure to it. You know, you meet them, you go down the pub and you have fun. If you're in league with someone, that is something far more serious. That's something that's closed and there are people that will try to get in there, but you don't want them. You only want people that are like you. The Champions League as it exists is not a league. It is a competition that's run by UEFA, and hence it's more like the FA Cup than the Football League is. So they're trying to create a European league. Whereas the Champions League is run by UEFA, they want this to be more like the Premier League, which is run by its member clubs. Now, the Premier League has the rather annoying niggle that to be created, it had to jump into bed with the FA, and the FA's got its golden share for it, which means that they can't change rules like getting rid of relegation, which they tried to do about a decade ago. We did a podcast on that. Which is something the Football League could do. They could decide to get rid of relegation to the conference level. So now you've got this European League. Is this just football evolving? Is this the historic and traditional route of football and what it has been since the beginning? Terry, what do you think?
It depends, Graham. It depends entirely on whether it happens or not.
Yeah,
I submit to you that there were probably other attempts to create and generate leagues and breakaway leagues and split-off leagues throughout the years as well. The ones that you've referred to are the ones that succeeded, and we will find out whether or not the European League will succeed. For me, it's not an evolution any more than it is, as Jan says, inevitable. Only Thanos is inevitable in the same way that only jungle is truly massive. All of this thing is decisions that are made, choices that are made, work that then has to be done to make it happen. And if it happens, it's because they've been successful in their outcome, and it may not happen. And I think that there's a very strong possibility that this league will collapse in on itself, because we have yet to see whether or not the league have the wherewithal of the partners, the money, the backing, and indeed the guts to see it through. So in the way that you frame the question, Graham, you're right. You could put this down to evolution. But what I would also suggest to you, and I'd say this with no knowledge, so you will know this better than I, because I know this is an area that you've studied, Graham, but I would perhaps submit the breakaway clubs that, say, formed the initial football league did so organically and perhaps with a degree of support from its members and from the spectators. And I feel that when you make significant changes to any structure in football or indeed anything in life, then it has to be done with a degree of consensus in order for it to be fair and in order for it to be just and in order for it to be above all successful. And I don't think that that's what's happening here at all. The answer to your question, Graham, is yes and no, sadly.
Jan, do you want to tackle that question? Is this evolutionary?
It's an economic evolution. As the riches went up, as the rich guys got richer, the barriers to entry into that exclusive club, the Premier League, and then the kind of top set in the Premier League became higher and higher and higher. And that's because the consolidation of wealth has become greater and greater. And so it gets to a point where those organisations, and this can happen in any economy, just decide, well, look, the barriers to entry are so high, there's so much money here, we could actually just not bother sharing the little bit that we have to share with the plebs and just go and do it ourselves. So that's why I thought it was inevitable, just because of the concentration of wealth at the top, and they know that they can get more for it. I mean, they're talking about, just for signing on the dotted line, you can get 400 million, which would cut in half Barcelona's debt and a sizable chunk of Real Madrid's debt as well. So you can understand why those guys are interested in it as well. So an evolution, yes, but it's certainly not a sporting one, which I think, though it is all about money, with the point that you raised as you framed the question. But I think there was sporting merit involved in that as well. But I don't think there's sporting merit involved in this at all. This is a money grab, pure and simple.
Do you see this as an attack on the whole of football, or is this a pointed attack on UEFA? Is this an attack of these biggest clubs wanting to say, we don't like the way that the Champions League run, we'd like to run the Champions League, we'd like to negotiate the TV deals for this rather than you, we'd like to negotiate the sponsors? Is it them saying, right, okay, this competition is going to get rid of your Champions League and be our competition, and we'll also be involved in our domestic leagues, though for what the rest of the domestic league is going to be fighting for is up for question. Do you think that that's the case, or do you think it is just that this will be the competition that they'll only be interested in? They won't want to be in domestic football or UEFA's competitions. It will just be the Super League.
Well, to the first point of the question, I think it's an attempt to wrestle power completely away from UEFA, definitely. I mean, this is open confrontation with UEFA, with their primary tournament, the Champions League. So the idea is that they don't want to share money with the likes of, I don't know, Leicester City or Sparta Prague or whoever that managed to qualify for it, that make it interesting. They just want to share it amongst themselves. So yes, it's an open assault on UEFA and the Champions League. And without these clubs, the Champions League, you know, we can argue the whys and wherefores of this, but their view would be, and I tend to agree with this view, it would be a worthless competition if you haven't got the big teams in it. And I think that they're also gambling, to answer your second point, that the national leagues, for example, the Premier League, will find an accommodation with these guys, because there's no way that the Premier League can go to the likes of Sky and BT and Amazon and try and up the cost of their deal, or even try and get something close to the cost of the price of their deal, without the likes of the Big Six, as they call themselves. So I think that the rebels, if you like, know that they've never had a hand as strong as this. They know they can do this now, and they're playing it. To be fair, they're playing it really well. Just looking at the timing and what they're doing, it's the perfect time for them to do this. I don't agree with it at all, and I don't agree with what this would be. And I know that's not what this podcast is about, but there'll be times in this where we will nod along and go, well, I can see why this has happened. I can see why they're doing this. However, the fallout of that will be seismic, I think, absolutely seismic.
Terry, do you want to answer that as well?
Yeah, I mean, in the words of Dr. Zarkov, it's an attack. I've been right all these years. It's a takeover attempt. Yeah. It's from a group of clubs who feel, and some may agree with this, feel that it is their milkshake that brings all the boys to the yard. And so they should therefore be the ones who have complete control over how this is managed and how the finances are governed and the nature of the competition. It is also a group of people who I think it's possible are turning somewhat desperate, because some of these clubs have got huge amounts of debt and are looking at the charts and the spreadsheets and figuring out how they're going to be able to manage that debt, while at the same time meeting the criteria of their billionaire owners for continued and continual growth. Growth obviously being a euphemism, a word that entrepreneurs use for greed. Our economy is obsessed with growth, and these people are obsessed with it as well. There just isn't enough money in the world for these people. And this is what's driving that. So yes, it is completely an attack. And you can tell because of the manner of the reaction. I mean, the other thing that's worth pointing out, Graham, you pointed this out on Twitter, that the Premier League were due to announce their Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Premier League is about to legitimize itself further by giving itself a Hall of Fame. And at the same time, six of its founding members, one, two, three, four of which were also part of the original Big Five from when the Premier League was founded, have absolutely spat in their faces with this gesture. It is a declaration of hostilities, and no wonder everyone is hopping mad with them.
Yes, the announcement of the Hall of Fame was meant to be at 7 o'clock tonight, which is about now, actually. So I have no idea if they're still going ahead with it. I think it'd be very hollow if they suddenly say, yes, Steven Gerrard is coming into our Hall of Fame. Yeah, I'm sure that would go down really well right now. Okay, so they're going right up against UEFA. I think UEFA is the biggest target. UEFA is the most to lose here, doesn't it? This is basically stripping it of all of its power over club football. Or that's what the movement is attempting. But what about international football, Terry? Where do you think the threats of players being stripped their chance of playing for their countries? How do you think that sits? And does that bring the thoughts and reactions of players into this situation?
Yeah, it's possible. It's possible if there's a real threat, as has been pointed out in the FA's statement, there is that it is clearly something that they are thinking about, that players who play for Super League clubs will effectively be unaffiliated from the Football Association and therefore ineligible to play for England. And indeed, one assumes the same would apply for Italian and Spanish and conceivably German players who play in this league as well. And that may result in players, and particularly players' unions, who have deep pockets and lawyers, getting involved in this argument as well. Because I would suggest to you that banning a player who is under contract at an employer from playing international football under these circumstances would be a restraint of trade or a restraint of labour. And I don't believe that any judge would really uphold that kind of decision in the end. It may take years. The wisest and politically wisest course would be for the associations to hold off on that threat, because I think that it would just be bad PR. It would get the players involved in an argument that I don't think it would be wise to get them involved with. I know players earn a lot of money. I know that there is a certain projection of anxiety about the amount of money that players get, but they are essentially workers, many of them from a working class background, who I don't think deserve this kind of nonsense. And I think it would be wrong to drag them into it. I think it would be a mistake to say to players, you will not be able to play for your country if you play for Arsenal or if you play for Manchester United in the European Super League.
Just to echo your point there, I think that punishing the workforce because of the actions of the board, if you like, is the worst thing to do. It wouldn't happen in any other industry. It just couldn't happen in any other industry. But the powers that be seem to think it's okay in this case. And I think that does smack of desperation. I think that is a kind of, well, if you're going to go along with this, and you're quite right in what you say, Terry, you may not even have a choice. Because if you're contracted to the club, what are you going to do? I mean, you can ask for a transfer, but you know, with all the moving parts that's involved in this, who's going to be able to afford you? Because it's not going to be a Premier League club if the Premier League doesn't exist in its current form anymore. Who's going to be able to afford, you know, Harry Kane if he decides, no, I want to still be able to play for England? Where's he going to go? America? At his age? You know, I don't think it's going to happen. So, yeah, this thing is a mess, and you're right. It could get massively litigious, and just the whole thing could just be an awful, awful mess.
FIFA have been making the noises that we would expect, but it took a little while for FIFA to come out, and they haven't really sort of said, no, this is awful, and they've not really gone on the attack about this. Because, as well, as we've spoken about on previous podcasts, they themselves haven't seen eye to eye with UEFA on the Champions League, and especially with their Club World Cup as well. They've got their own interest in this. So this is also another point where these breakaway clubs are looking at and saying, look, it's fine you organising these competitions, but we want to control the pie here. We don't want you controlling the pie because, basically, we're not going to get as much as we could be getting. Terry, you're right. It's all about greed. This is late capitalism at its best, which does make it interesting when our government is coming up with plans for completely changing football ownership in this country, isn't it, Terry?
Well, yeah, that's astonishing. I mean, this could conceivably actually be the bigger story, at least in the UK, that the government now announced a review of football club ownership right out of the blue. Well, not so much out of the blue, but clearly as a reaction to this. I doubt very much that this was, you know, something that they were thinking about doing before this. But can we just take a step back and marvel at the Football Association for a moment? Because it is fun and profitable and even more fun to portray the FA as sort of like impotent, incompetent, bumbling sort of like toffs who can't get anything done. But they clearly do know how to influence the state. They know how to wield state power. You know, they dragged Boris Johnson out of whoever's bed he happened to be in on a Sunday afternoon to make a statement against this, which is no mean feat. And also seems to have accelerated reform of club football in this country, which is extraordinary. The pace of which events have gone by is extraordinary. And I think that that is something that may well be catching the clubs, the breakaway clubs, unawares, is just to what extent the forces at work against them are capable of mobilising themselves. And that's one of the reasons why this may not succeed.
Does the government even have the power to do that? Or is that just going to embroil in lawyers as well?
Yeah, probably. I think that given that you've got a right-wing government in this country who are light touch when it comes to markets, I think that they wouldn't want to get involved in putting any kind of rules in place to try and restrict it at all. The first thought that came to my mind when Terry mentioned the change of how football clubs are owned was that doing this is a kind of prevent a reoccurrence of what happened with Bury and almost happened to Wigan and clubs like that. I don't think that they're in the business of restricting how massive corporations do things. And that's what the clubs that have signed up to the Super League so far are. It is interesting that the Prime Minister came out and said something about it, but I don't necessarily think, or I remain to be convinced, whether those two things are linked. So I think that this government, given that half of the clubs involved are from this country, will be watching this very, very carefully. But I'm not sure how much they'll want to get involved because it goes against their own ideology.
And of course, as well, if it turns out that Newcastle are invited, then the Prime Minister could quickly change his tune.
Well, he could. And allegedly, he's been lobbied directly by the Saudi government to push that through. And that's why we've said on this podcast that we thought that was inevitable. Whether that's inevitable now, I don't know. Because, you know, for anybody looking to buy a football club the size of Newcastle, for example, that isn't going to be involved in a Super League and potentially is going to be involved in a lessened Premier League, you kind of go, well, it's not worth 300 million quid anymore, Mr. Ashley. You know, it's worth a lot less than that. So, yeah, I mean, the ramifications is huge. I mean, the situation at Tottenham today, who are they going to replace Jose with if Tottenham aren't going to be playing in the Premier League? If that indeed happens, I'm not sure it will, but, you know, it opens up a huge can of worms for a lot of situations here, doesn't it?
If you're looking for motivations for the Conservatives to get involved in this, because Jan's analysis of Tory policies is absolutely right. I mean, they are hyper neoliberals and usually tend not to get involved in the workings of free market capitalists. But there's another dimension to what they do as well, and that is they are literally Conservatives. And this is an electorally sensitive issue. There's votes in football. And the wording of Oliver Dowden's statement to the House of Commons is pretty clear and pretty unambiguous. They are firmly on the side of the FA and firmly against this decision, which may seem counterintuitive in view of what we understand and what we know about right-wing politicians. But there is a dimension to the government and indeed to the Tories in which they value institutions, cultural and social institutions like football, particularly when they're busy going around changing all manner of different laws and pursuing austerity agendas and closing hospitals and closing libraries and otherwise eroding our public life, that there are some aspects of public life that must maintain. Otherwise, there's a possibility of a loss of cohesion. This is, I think, actually a much, much stronger and goes to the heart of government more than I think perhaps we realise, more than I realise, actually. And I wouldn't dismiss the government's intervention today too lightly.
Going back onto Jan, your point about Tottenham and about where that leaves them now, let's just have a little chat about Jose Mourinho being fired. Now, it's been laughable seeing the stories that have been doing the rounds on social media today. Do you think they give a truthful account of what's been going on in the boardroom of Tottenham this weekend?
It's possible. It's possible that Jose Mourinho knocked on Daniel Levy's door and was outraged at the decision to form a breakaway Super League. And in a fit of pique, Daniel Levy fired him. It's more likely that it's been all of these games that he's been losing. And that, you know, he is a spiky character and not easy to get on with. And it usually ends up this way with Mourinho sooner or later. It's just that normally he can deliver a trophy. It is odd that it's happened so close to the League Cup final. I will give you that. That the timing is odd and the timing is weird because of obviously all the stuff that's going on. And so I suspect that probably his, you know, his astroturfers are seeing this as an opportunity to try and portray him in a good light so that it helps him to find the next job, which I'm sure, you know, he will, or whether it will be for a Super League club, I'm less certain.
Just a few days before a League Cup final, not even Sunderland would sack a manager that close to a Wembley visit, would they?
No, even Sunderland wouldn't do that. When I was reading the some of the reports this morning that he went because of his view on the European Super League, and then that was quickly rubbished. You know, a part of me, and you know this, guys, I'm not given over to conspiracy theories at all. Really, no, please don't laugh. Please don't laugh. But it did make me think that there's something in that. You know, just a week before the League Cup final. Come on, he's said in the past that he didn't think it was a good idea. So, I'm just leaving the door open for that one. That's all I'm saying. I don't think aliens are involved this time. But there's something going on. Interestingly, Jurgen Klopp, I was reading in the Liverpool Echo, said a couple of years ago that he was opposed to any form of European Super League. I'm wondering whether he's regretting his words now. He probably is.
Do you know what I think? I think this is Dan Levy's chance. Come the weekend, he'll be on the bench in a little tracksuit. He'll be manager of the day of Tottenham. He's going to take the team out. It's what he's always wanted. This is what all these years of ownership of Tottenham have culminated at. He's going to be the one to give them some silverware.
Interesting, Graham. It's a fantastic story because with all the news that's been happening, you probably missed the fact that actually Ryan Mason, who's on the coaching staff at Tottenham, has been given the role as caretaker manager, and he will be the guy who's leading Tottenham out at Wembley. And if you remember, he's the chap who fractured his skull in 2017 when he was a Hull City player and had to retire. He's 29 years old. He's a former Spurs player. It's a fantastic story, actually. And he's from Enfield. He'll be a Tottenham lad. It's a great story. So actually, you know, that is one really piece of good news that's come out of all of this. And I wish him the best of British, frankly.
Yeah, certainly. And good luck to him as well. Actually, I think that's probably just enough to tip the balance in their favour, isn't it? I think at the weekend, Chelsea beat Pep side. Come on, Jan, what do you think?
Yeah, they didn't beat the same side that won in the Champions League earlier in the week. But they're beatable. But I just don't think that Tottenham Hotspur are the team to do it.
I think it's really interesting because I watched the Man City game against Borussia Dortmund for obvious reasons. And I mean, for much of that game, Dortmund really, they could have taken control of that game. And they really did have a go at City. And I think that if you set up to be frightened of City, then they will walk all over you. But I think actually, if you face up to them, then they do, as they say, shit the bed from time to time. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I imagine that this will be, from the Tottenham point of view, this will be the players. I mean, Ryan Mason will organise them to a degree, but I suspect the players will manage themselves in this, on this game, for this one-off game. And that can be successful on a one-off game. I mean, I'm sure we all remember Chelsea's Champions League victory, or Champions League run, in fact, under Roberto Di Matteo, which was effectively coordinated by the senior players in the side. So we'll see that. It's actually added a real extra wrinkle. Assuming, of course, that neither of these two teams haven't been kicked out of the cup by the time the final actually happens.
I've got a feeling that the EFL won't mind at all at the moment.
I'm sure they're obviously massively against it. But given what you said about it, yeah, of course. I mean, like, they, you know, they would do well to remember their history. And, you know, people would, I think, remember to do well to remember their history before they get too sanctimonious about this. Because as you point out, Graham, there will almost certainly have been losers for every time a league has been successfully launched. And if it happens here, then that's what it will be. We should guard against a sense of entitlement when forming opinions about this. Just as things have been the way that they've been for a long time, it doesn't necessarily mean that they have to be ever changing. But as I say, and as Jan says, you know, decisions like this have to be done on sporting grounds first and foremost, or if not sporting ground, then with a consensus. And that's just not happening here at all.
Mm.
You mentioned Borussia Dortmund there. So can we have a brief summary of your opinion from the German angle of this announcement? Because from what we heard, Bayern were the holders of the template document, but they've not been included in this, and neither has any other club in Germany. What's been the take coming from there?
Well, I suspect they're keeping their powder dry. I think that they have areas of concern. I mean, it's possible, because PSG aren't involved either, and it's possible that there's a Qatar link going on there. You could draw that link, but there's no way of knowing, in fairness. But what is also possible is that they're mindful of the fact that their ownership structure is such that they are democratically accountable to their membership, who may vote them out next time round if they do something that they don't like, that's not popular. So they have to be careful about making a decision. Bayern also have all, they have money. They don't, you know, a lot of these clubs, as has been pointed out, although they don't actually have all the money at all, they've got all of the debt. And this is being driven by a greater economic need that Bayern Munich don't share. I think Borussia Dortmund's situation is even more complicated. Their fans will be just as vociferously opposed to this as the Bayern Munich fans will be. And moreover, Borussia Dortmund don't have the money that Bayern Munich have. And also, they're not as big a club as these other clubs. I know this is worth pointing out, that just because they've got the massive stadium with the big capacity, they are actually, you know, I would say to you, a smaller club. Their recruitment strategy of recruiting the best young players is because they can't really compete for the best players at their peak. They can't go out and sign 25, 26-year-old Champions League-ready players necessarily, you know, unless it's sort of like from the Bundesliga. So they're in a slightly different situation, and their business model is somewhat different to everyone else's. And I would suggest that probably they're just keeping their powder dry to see what emerges, because it's worth bearing in mind, we've been told that this is going to be underwritten by JP Morgan, but I don't think that's enough. They need to be bringing partners with them. They need to be bringing corporate partners with them. They need to be bringing broadcasters partners with them. And they need to have this in place. And if none of this is in place, then it will fall apart possibly within days. These guys could be utterly full of shit. They really could. Look at that logo on that press release. That was done by an intern. That was not done by a graphic designer. They may well be full of shit. And we're going to find out in the next few days, because I assume at some point they will have to start producing the goods and say, look, this is how much money we have. This is what we're bringing. Otherwise, it could really fall to pieces really, really badly for them. And so we will see. I'm not saying that's not a prediction, but it is one possible outcome as to all of this. We've not seen the money from these guys yet.
I think that bringing in a name like JP Morgan at this stage suggests that the money is there. I don't think they'd want their, I was going to say good name, but you take my point, dragged through the mud. So I'd say that JP Morgan have probably got the I mean, they're the financiers, yeah, they're underwriting it, but they will be reaching out and getting money in from, you know, from interested parties. I didn't think of the Qatar angle until Graham mentioned it earlier today. That is quite an interesting one, but I while there is the possibility, Terry, that it could all fall apart, I think this is too advanced. And we've seen snippets of contracts and things like that as well, haven't we? And the fact that an organization is big and is prestigious in their own way, as JP Morgan suggests, that this is real, very, very real.
All I would say to that is it's one thing to say that JP Morgan are going to underwrite your endeavor. It's another thing for it to actually happen. They may well have had a meeting with JP Morgan. They may well, and JP Morgan may well have said, yeah, this sounds like a great caper. We're on board with this. But there may well be only happening with certain guarantees. And that would certainly involve other partners involved. And so I assume, like you, that these guys have done their homework and they've got it all together and that they've got all this place. And then we wait in the coming days for the announcements to be made. But we should consider the possibility that they've done none of this, that they've been carried along by their own hubris and they haven't. And we do, as we know, hubris is a thing in football, and that they haven't actually been as diligent as we think that they have been. And in which case, then they are in for a world of pain, because there's talk of kicking the remaining Champions League teams out of the Champions League. A real talk of that happening as early as Friday. This could happen. Again, it may not. A lot of this is angry words being spoken, and we're in the middle of the anger right now and a lot of the emotion. So it may well all subside and die down. But the fact that they're even talking about that is quite a big deal. Consider also this. If this happens next year and effectively these clubs do not participate in the Champions League, then who does BT Sport and all the other TV rights holders sue for the devaluation of their broadcast rights?
Yeah.
Because I would suggest to you that UEFA will say, no, you can't sue us because this is what I did. You sue the clubs that have effectively pulled out of the competition. So I think that I think there are elements of this that may not have been thought through correctly. And that's why I'm wondering whether or not that this is just a horrific grift, a massive gamble, an act of desperation. But we'll see. We'll know next week. But we won't be talking about it next week because, of course, we'll be talking about the Conference League next week.
Of course.
But, you know,
can't delay it anymore.
It's possible we'll know what's happened next week.
I think with JP Morgan, they're like any bank. It's not going to be their money. It's going to be someone else's money. They're just the one carrying it. And we don't know whose money it really is, which is dodge completely. Now, of course, Sky have been putting up people like Gary Neville to completely like slam this whole caper. But I can guarantee that people at those broadcasters were on the phone to the people behind this Super League all day today saying, look, if you want this to get off the ground, you need us on side. And for us to be on side, you've got to give us some promises that we're going to be on the first step. They know what side their bread's buttered, and they know that they need this if it goes ahead. They're not going to be like, no, we stand by the principles of tradition in football. No, we'll stick with our Premier League, thank you very much. Without these splitters, it just won't happen. It won't happen at all, will it? We know that. There is going to be so much play, so much politics involved over the next few days, because it will be days. And Terry's right, that timescale of sorting this out by Friday, is what they're going to have to look at, because plane tickets have to be booked, don't they? And hotels have to be booked, and COVID tests have to be made. That's what we're all forgetting as well. There's still a pandemic going on while this is happening. And they're all...
I've forgotten all about that. Yeah,
I know, exactly. We've got this far without mentioning it.
Do you think that they'll get kicked out of the Premier League, lads? Let's say it happens. Do you think that the danger is that this could be the only league that they're in, that they will end up not being allowed to play in their domestic league?
UEFA can't do anything about this if it decides to go ahead, other than sanction the players and possibly sue the clubs involved. But for the Premier League, they've got a way of salvaging this. And the intention of the splitters is to continue with domestic competition. The Premier League, as you said, knows which side their bread is buttered on. And I think that if this does go ahead, I think they'll find an accommodation to allow the six clubs to remain in the Premier League. Otherwise, that will just be the end of the Premier League as we know it. If they kick those clubs out, it would be seen by everyone as a lesser competition, and certainly the money that it enjoys currently will dry up very, very quickly. So I don't think they're going to get kicked out. No, I think they'll find a way through it.
Yeah, there are principles, and there's losing half of your income, isn't there?
More than half, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Six clubs.
Yeah. Those six clubs. I would think that Sky would go really low ball to the remaining clubs if they kick them out. And yeah, it's fine for fans to say, oh yeah, sod them, let them go. But the owners of their clubs will not say that.
No.
They'll say, yeah, we'll back you. And the thing is, it could just end up changing so many things about the way football's structured. I don't think the Premier League will kick them out. I think the FA will harumph and grumble quite a lot. But for me, it's that whole relationship the FA have with the Premier League, that golden share. And I think that's the model that could end up being the one that we end up with, where UEFA allow this breakaway league, but have a golden share in it and have some degree of control over those clubs and claim it to be a victory. But if this doesn't happen now, it's just kicking the can down a couple of seasons.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. If it doesn't happen now, it's a huge defeat by the breakaway clubs. And I think it could take a generation for them to lick their wounds and come back again, because it would be such a humiliation. Because all of these guys are being sent to Coventry, that all of the positions of power that they have at the FA, at UEFA, any influence that they have will be gone, because they're being kicked off various committees and boards that they have representation on right now. They'll be publicly humiliated. Very few people will take them seriously. Serious people won't take them seriously. And these are the guys in whose interest it mainly is the Super League is in. And so unless there was another one that emerged that was led by Paris Saint-Germain and Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund, I would suggest that actually it could be a generation before we see this one come back again, because the defeat will be too strong. And that's why there's so much at stake, which is why I suspect that they do have the backing and have thought this through, that at least they better have, because otherwise there is going to be absolute hell to pay. I think you're right. I think it's great for the Premier League, because it gives them they've been denied their Hall of Fame, but they have now had the opportunity to suffer ritual humiliation, which any august institution has to have at least once in their lives and in their history. And also it gives them a taste of their own medicine, because they fucked everybody over in 1992. So now they get a bit of a taste of their own medicine. Although it is worth bearing in mind that, again, the same clubs who helped push the Premier League forward are the same clubs who are pushing this through. But those clubs, hopefully, I mean, I really hope that it falls on their asses and they get a right old kicking out of this. And not because of the fans and not because of the clubs themselves. It's just the owners of that clubs are absolute charlatans, and they shouldn't. Mm-hmm. People like that should not be in football. And really, if you're going to blame anyone, you blame the Premier League and their lousy criteria for ownership of football clubs. Because to allow these chances in is just, you know, appalling. And it's not how it should be done. And now they've reached the point where even the bloody Tories are thinking of regulating them. That's how bad it's got.
That's how evil they are.
Wow. That is evil. I mean, even Priti Patel's probably sitting there going, Jesus, those guys are animals, monsters.
She won't kick them out, though. They're too rich to be kicked out.
Well, I suppose this is the time of the podcast where I start wrapping things up, and I find a nice little segue into the weekend box set. Looking forward to the weekend's football, but bloody, I don't even know what's going to be played and what teams are going to still exist come the weekend. I'll put Arsenal in there for their Friday night game against Everton. But are they going to be in the Premier League? I don't know. Man City Tottenham, of course, we've already talked about. That's on Sunday. Are they going to be there? I don't know. I do know that Lyon versus Lille on the last knockings of Sunday night, that's still going to be ahead. So maybe we'll have one match to watch at least. If you want to see what we put in our box set, then get along to sofpodcast.com and click on the link to the weekend box set. Sign up for the newsletter or come and read it on the blog. But we really do suggest that you sign up for the newsletter, because then you stay informed and you don't have to rely on flicking through Twitter, because you know how depressing it is. You know how depressing it's been for the last couple of days anyway, yeah? Yeah? You don't really want that in your life. What you want is old-fashioned emails that you can control.
That's absolutely right. Email is the way forward, just like it was back in 1992.
Oh, yeah. this. Listeners, you'll have your own opinion about the European Super League because you're well informed. You listen to this podcast, for God's sake. We know how well informed you are, but you also listen to other podcasts. I know. We know you do. So if you've got anything you want to say, or if you've heard any wisdom off any of those lesser podcasts and you want to share it with us, perhaps point us in the right direction, then please do get in touch with us through the social media, through the website, or however. But that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry Fennell, it's goodbye.
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 You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
And there's a football match on as well tonight.
There is, Leeds-Liverpool.
Leeds v Liverpool. And did you see Leeds, in their official website, they just refer to them as Merseyside Reds?
Did they really?
It's their Pro Evo name, I think, isn't it?
They've included the badge, but just the but they've not called them Liverpool, which is pettiness I can definitely get behind.
Oh, we're all behind that one.
It's the scale, the depth of feeling. I mean, shit me, this is serious, guys.
Yeah.
This is going to keep us going for months.
Yeah. Yay!
Yes. No thinking. Yes.
Everything's crumbling apart. Yes. Anything to not talk about the Conference League, isn't it?